This is 50% Renewable, a podcast from the National Trust. I'm Lucy Green, a professor of physics in UCL's Department of Space and Climate Physics, where my passion is for the sun, our star that is centrally important to all of our lives. And as a scientist, I'm committed to achieving a sustainable future. As the National Trust moves towards its 2021 target of generating 50% of its power from renewable sources, I'll be taking a 750-mile trip around England and Wales to look at five of more than 100 renewable energy schemes that are being worked on across the Trust. This may give us some insight into what a sustainable energy future could look like. One of the partners helping us achieve this goal is BMWI, who are helping enhance renewable energy technology at the places the National Trust cares for, and enabling visitors to charge their cars at more of their properties. They've also supplied us with an all-electric BMW i3 for the journey and have helped bring this podcast to you.
The third leg of my journey has brought me here to the Blickling Estate, a 4,600-acre parkland deep in the East Anglian countryside. At its centre is Blickling Hall, which is a stunning 17th-century mansion surrounded by lakes, manicure gardens, and the place where I am now, which is a beautifully planted fruit and vegetable and flower garden. And I just get a sense of actually how much water would be needed to maintain this site. But here at Blickling, they've upcycled an old hydro-powered sewage system, and they're going to use it to manage their water usage in a more sustainable way. To find out more, I've been told that I need to follow the sound of water.
And that sound of water was coming from an open manhole next to which stood Spike Mallin, Blickling's facilities manager.
Spike, how are you?
Hello.
Spike, why is this water that's rushing under our feet so important?
Originally, this system was installed by the Victorians to help get rid of the sewage. With the RAF taking over the hall and the grounds in the Second World War, they installed a much more efficient sewage system, and this became redundant. But now we have some volunteer engineers that are gradually refurbishing it, and it's going to be used to irrigate the walled garden.
So helping the National Trust in its sustainability plans.
Absolutely.
That's impressive to hear that the site is thinking about how you can use natural resources.
This is actually the smaller of two water projects. The biggest one we have is over there. As you can see, the lake. We're using the energy from the lake to help save the most significant book collection in the National Trust and possibly save an ancient language from obscurity. But for that, you'd need to go into the library.
OK, I definitely want to find out more about that. Hopefully I'll see you later on.
OK, bye-bye.
Bye. It's great to have an opportunity just to have a quick look on the way up into the main house. And it's a very impressive driveway as you come up. Two big wings and then the main house arching in front of me with very ornate decoration. And there's a magnificent arch to come through into the main house. Let's see. Morning. I'm looking for the library. Can you point me in the right direction?
Yes, of course. You just head up this beautiful staircase, turn left, and you'll find the long gallery up there.
Great. Thanks very much. Well, I feel very privileged to be let loose in this house before the visitors come in. I'm heading up to the library, up a very ornately carved wooden staircase, and I'm surrounded by life-size portraits of an era when grand wigs were worn and velvet robes, red and blues, extremely colourful. Oh, very large stained glass window depicting different religious scenes. I think the library's through here. This has brought me into a very large room with tapestries lining the wall, but if I come through there, aha, I found it. Very long book-lined room. This is definitely the library. Okay, I've seen someone over here who's wearing a badge. Hi, I'm Lucy.
Oh, hello, Lucy.
Good to meet you. I can see your badge says Jan Brooks-Bullen, and you are the House Collections.
I am. How can I help you?
Well, I'm keen, dying to find out more about this fantastic collection of books that you have.
Fantastic. How long do you have?
Probably not long enough.
I'm not bragging, but they are pretty spectacular. Yes. This is a special collection. This is the Richard Ellis collection, the fifth in the country of importance.
Can you give me a feeling of the sort of breadth of the collection here?
Funnily enough, there's something for everyone because we have maps, Renaissance books, architectural, but there's an awful lot of religious texts in this as well. Richard Ellis, who compiled the collection, was really keen on capturing Bibles.
And in that collection of Bibles, there's one that has a very special story.
This is the Eliot Bible.
So it says the Eliot Bible, John Eliot, 1604 to 1690. Yes. It's incredibly old.
It is very old.
I can see that the Bible's not written in English. Tell me about what this book is.
It's phonetically translated from the Wapanoag tribe.
And the Wapanoag tribe, where did they live?
In America.
So it's a Bible that's been translated into a First Nation language.
An almost lost language. It's one of probably 40 in the world. It's quite significant here.
I can see it's open on the page Genesis. Can you read any of this?
Well, there's a little card here, so a little cheat card.
O mamusa wunitu panna tab tuami up biblum god nasiwi nukoni testament ka wonk wuksu.
How am I doing? Pretty good, actually. It's pretty good, yes.
Is it a phonetic language? I mean, it's written as you would
it
say.
It was written by one gentleman, listening to everyone speak it and copying it down by hand.
By the 1800s, Wapanoag had fallen out of use as a spoken language. I'm assuming then that that means it has a sort of double significance because you can say it as the First Nation would have spoken it.
Absolutely. It's been overlooked for many years because a lot of these languages have been sort of not used for so long.
Today, these Bibles contain the only written examples of the Wapanoag language, making it a treasured key that has enabled the Wapanoag people to revive their lost language and reconnect with their history and cultural identity. I mean, I would not have expected to have found that in a National Trust property.
Well, you wouldn't, and it's tucked away on one of the shelves, and you wouldn't even notice it on the shelves itself. Quite explosive when you think, you know, what it contains.
And this Bible is just one of over 12,000 precious books stored in this library alone. Looking after a collection of this importance does present some unique challenges. It is placed in a heritage building. So, I mean, I look around, huge windows.
This house, even when it was built, started to leak. But over time, the roof timbers have started to deteriorate because of the water ingress through the walls. And the timbers are set right into the walls. Walls get wet. That encourages things like the Death Watch beetle, of which we're trying to...
OK, that sounds bad. I haven't heard about the Death Watch beetle before.
The Death Watch beetle likes a very high humidity, chewy wood. If it finds wood that's damp, right, everyone in, guys, we've found a nice home. And their larvae will eat through the timbers and into the book presses.
Oh, that sounds dreadful.
Well, the larvae can then get into the back of the books, eat through the bindings, eat into the pages, and we have great problems trying to prevent that happening.
Does that mean then that you're having to put a lot of money and resources into keeping this environment?
We've got a library project to secure the roof timbers and the building, and that's been hugely successful. But the next one is to do with the heating, to get the heating right in these spaces.
And what was your past method for heating in here?
Radiators, oil fired, because it was traditional. It was how these houses were run. And we never really considered the dangers of having oil on site.
What are the risks that oil poses to these precious books?
Well, it's a fire hazard. And if it gets into the soil, it's huge problems. And that's what we suffered from in the past here.
Oh, you've had an oil leak
here? We've had an oil spill here, yes, in the past few years. And it was a real challenge to us.
Are there any records of the oil spill?
Yes, we keep lots of records and data and photographs. They're kept in the office. If you'd like to go and have a look at them, we can do that now.
That would be great. Okay. Thank you. Gosh, Jan, it's quite a trek from one part of this building to the other.
Don't know where you're going. You can get lost. Yes. Hi, Spike. Brought a visitor to you to look at the pictures, if you have, of the oil spills. That tunnel there, quite close to the house. So the smell actually got into the building as well. It was quite bad.
Dreadful, yes. Yeah. So I can see in the photos, it must have had a significant cost to repair that.
If I remember rightly, it was nearing £300,000.
What happened afterwards?
One of the boilers in the hall sprung a water leak.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. So you had the oil, then you had the water.
Yeah. Told you we were leaky. Yeah.
You did? So these two major incidents here gave you an opportunity almost to reflect on what's happened and think about the future you're going to have to do some fixes.
Yeah.
And what's the best way forward with that?
I attended a lecture by a chap that had installed a lake source heat pump at Castle Howard.
They're using that for their energy, because it sort of seems a bit counterintuitive, doesn't it? A relatively cold lake providing heat for a building.
Yeah, and I can show you how that works.
I think we need to go and see the lake and we'll talk through how it works. Jan, is it okay to come and find you later on?
Yes, I'll probably be in my second favourite place, which is the secondhand bookshop, so I'll see you there.
No surprises. Right, no. I'll see you later.
Okay, bye.
Just a short walk from the hall is Blickling's stunning 2-kilometre-long lake, but on a cold day like today, it can be difficult to understand just how this body of water can be the source of heat to warm Blickling Hall.
Well, Spike, what's the temperature of this water?
At the moment, it's 8.5 degrees.
8.5 degrees Celsius. OK, so there's a bit of thinking to do around this then. So how do we get energy from the water that ultimately creates heat in the house itself?
It's a bit like a fridge, but you're doing it backwards. When you put your hand behind a fridge, it's warm.
Yes, yeah.
It's the same sort of principle, but in reverse.
Heat pumps use the residual heat stored in water, air or the ground to keep our homes and businesses warm. They work by pumping a liquid through pipes, allowing it to absorb heat from its surroundings, raising the liquid's temperature just slightly. This tepid liquid then moves into a heat exchanger, giving up its energy to a gas, which is then compressed, causing a big increase in temperature. And finally, this hot gas can be used to heat the water in your radiators at home.
If you look, you can just see the pipes under the surface of the water.
Yeah, I can just see a bundle running out from the edge of the lake.
Yeah, well, there's actually about 5 kilometres of pipe. They're in a loop, so the loops come back and they are fed into two larger pipes, which go into the hall, into the boiler room, where the magic happens.
OK, well, let's head off to the boiler room to see how the magic happens.
Okay.
As we follow the path of the pipes, we soon arrive at the boiler room.
Here we are, the boiler room.
Okay, I can hear the hum giving it away.
And they are running at the moment.
Right, oh gosh, it's quite noisy. So we're in a room with a series of cladded pipes and metal boxes. This blue one says property heating system expansion valve. Ha. So we've talked about the coolant in the pipes coming from the lake. What happens to that liquid when it gets to this boiler room?
Well, these two machines are the heat pumps. The coolant from the lake goes through a heat exchanger to the radiators in the hall.
So there's two steps to the process happening in here, and that compression is the key bit because it takes the low temperature fluid to a higher pressure, which then means the temperature increases, and then the heat exchanger can extract the temperature and turn it into heat in the building itself.
If I remember rightly, it takes 1 kilowatt hour of energy to produce, I think it's around about 4.5 kilowatt hours of heat.
So that's a four times increase there. So that's ideal, isn't it? You get four times the bang for your buck, as it
exactly.
were. Okay, well, it's quite noisy in here, and to be honest, it's more beautiful outside than it is in the boiler room. So let's head back out again.
Okay.
The four times energy out versus energy in, I just think is absolutely brilliant. But are there any downsides to the system?
The only real downside is our electricity usage has gone up. Obviously, we need to power the pumps. But that means that we're not having to pay £30,000 a year to get fuel oil in.
So you don't have tankers bringing oil in, you're not burning the oil that's putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere?
Yeah, we've reduced our carbon footprint by 69 tonnes.
Oh, wow.
Which is quite a lot.
So even the downsides actually have got upsides to them as well?
Absolutely.
Well, I think we should catch up with Jan again. And she said she'd meet us in the bookshop, so show me the way.
Okay, here we go.
Hi again, Jan.
Hi,
good
you're
to
back
see you.
From the lake.
I am. So I feel like very good. I feel like I've been on that journey now. We started with the books. I've into the lake. I've learned about the lake source heat pump, and it's clearly an incredible piece of technology. But what I'd like to know more is, how is it helping you with the conservation of these books?
It helps the environment, continuity, consistency. It gives us everything we need to monitor the collection in the library.
And thinking now to the future, do you have what you need, or is there more work to be done?
Oh no, there's always more we can do. What we're hoping to do within the house itself is to zone the areas so that we can raise temperatures in one room and lower them in another room. So there's always more we can be doing. But using and harnessing technology is the right way forward for us.
And when we think about renewable energy spike, we often think about solar panels and generating electricity on site. Are there any plans for this property to go down that route?
Not at present. We have looked at it, certainly to help us with the lake source heat pump project, but technology is not with us at the moment that can help us do that. Because of the area that we're in, the setting, it's just not right to have solar panels dotted across the fields.
It's really important to keep as it is, because we have the east wing and the west wing. You spoil any of that arrival, sense of arrival for visitors, it will really impact on us.
And the issue of waiting for technology to catch up with the needs has actually been a sort of theme of the journey that I've been going on. It's not an issue that's off the table. You'll come back to it, presumably, you know, on a regular basis, to be thinking, right, what's available now?
Yeah, so we're always keen to steal with pride. And anything that we can do that helps our finances and moves us forward as a property and as a charity, we will do it.
Thank you very much. I've learned a huge amount. And as usual, I'm going to take it away with me and have a think about how I can do some of these things at home. So thank you both.
Pleasure. Thank you.
On a personal level, visiting Blickling Hall has made me think about what's right for my home. Previously, I hadn't really taken heat pumps seriously, but seeing how efficient they are, it's an investment when you have a long-term plan. And we all need to be thinking much longer term if we are to get to our sustainable future.
The next leg of my road trip takes me just 20 minutes down the road to Felbrigg Hall and Gardens, where I'll be able to give my car a much needed charge. I'll also be learning how the heating needs of the properties there, the holiday accommodation, offices and so on, are being powered by the surrounding woodlands.
You can find more episodes of 50% Renewable on all major podcast directories or on our website at nationaltrust.org.uk/50%. That's 50% where you'll also find information about what steps you can take to use water in a more sustainable way. This is 50% Renewable, a podcast from the National Trust. The production of this podcast has been made possible by BMWi, exclusive automotive partner for the National Trust.